Welcome back, friends. Yes, I promised we would start talking about art and sacred scripture at the very end of the last episode. But I think something, I saw something today in the news, and it's finishing up a little bit on the need for a society to have leisure, time for reflective and creative thought. And some of the news people thought that in their mind, 1955 was perhaps the most idyllic time in the United States. One fellow was from Britain, and of course, the other one was from the United States. And they thought that because at that time, wages were high, interest rates were low, and goods and services were low. So one income, and at that time, at the husband's income, could support a wife, a children, and pay off that house so that they, right, mortgage, death, death note, would ease
Yeah.
could relatively be easily handled.
Right.
And that society allowed the opportunity. Only an opportunity, that not a command, an opportunity for creative thought in a boom. And I think the fact that today a lot of families feel that they can't do that
Yeah.
they are so time deprived that I think that impacts many, many things in art
Yeah, and
being one of them.
it's the irony of the modern age, right? We were assured that we were going to be that all of these things were going to redound to our free time. There's a book that was written by Sigurd Undset that kind of goes along with this. I'm afraid I don't remember the name. I'll look into it if I recall. But in a book by Anthony Eslin, he quotes this part where, you know what? In between the next thing, if we can come back to this, I'll find it and I will read it because it's worth reading. It goes exactly to that, where it's the difference between production for the sake of utilitarianism and production for the sake of joy. Now, there are two different ways of looking at the same end, right? You and I have stayed home. No one could ever accuse us of being unproductive. But in the American economy, we are not considered producers, even though you have given to the world, what are you, seven children, eight children? I've given 10 children to the world. I mean, obviously, we're extraordinarily productive. And now the grandchildren, right, that are coming as a result of this. But there's no monetary tag that they can put to us. So tragically, we have misplaced monetary utilitarianism as the criteria by which we define productivity. And so everything that is not tending toward making money is now being put aside, even though there are two different means. It kind of goes along with Aristotle's concept of equality, right? You will have a numeric equality, which is strictly division by, cutting the apple into four pieces for four different people. Or the equality, which is considered the equality of dessert. If the little child only needs a tenth of the apple, but the, then it's not true equality to give him a quarter, right? And I think the same thing is true to be said about productivity. If the only criteria that you can judge productivity by is monetization, then there will be no time for what would be considered a waste of time, quote unquote, right? Which would be that reflective and that creative thought, because it can't be monetized.
That is right. That is right. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, my friends. Now let's go into sacred scripture, shall we?
Digression, right. Digression. Now we're going to try and tangent back to the reality on at hand, right?
That's right. That's right. Art in the New Te in the Old Testament, the prohibition of idols, Exodus 24, Deuteronomy 5:8, forbids creating graven images. It was against the idol worship of the surround. No, it's not against the idol worship. The people surrounding Israel worshipped idols, And that was a, you know, that was a very much of a contrast for Israel to not do that. However, the employment of craftsmanship and beauty is found in the adornment of the tabernacle and the temple, as shown in Leviticus. For example, the mercy seat with the two golden cherubim described in Exodus 25:18-22. Or the walls and the roof of the tabernacle with figures of cherubim from Exodus 26:1. Some biblical scholars remark that the artistry with the tabernacle and temple evoke the Garden of Eden. It's a recollection of our entering into worship with the Lord. Somehow, you know, that real desire to enter into that type of a relationship.
Yeah, that is very interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, you have this concept that also arose, you know, with the Protestant Reformation, you know, that period of iconoclasm, where they just came in and they destroyed anything that had really beauty, you know, taking literally it's interesting the words that they're willing to take literally, right? They will take the literal image of don't have graven images, which had to do with the fact of worshiping the image that was shown, right? As opposed to a recognition of, you know, they'll take that seriously, but they will not then have the recognition of, you know, this is my body, this is my blood, which I think actually does pertain toward the graven images also. It's very interesting to them that there's no, and I do think that maybe that relates somewhat to the imaginative powers of the human person, because God himself knew, like when he told, you know, David not to build him a temple or a resting place or a home for a body for him to be in, right? Some place for him to rest his head, because God always foresaw that he was already going to create a place for Christ, right? In the womb of the Blessed Mother. But there, I think that there's kind of a tie over that and in an unwillingness to be able to see that God can be present, that there's a level of beauty that is present in artistry that has been lost a little bit with that aspect.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we'll have a little short one here because we're about to go into Jesus, the incarnation, the God-man. So that's where this is going to change with the advent of the incarnation. All right. Till then, my friends, fides. Ed Roscio.